stretched in that exquisite way. I dart my gaze to meet smouldering pits of dark intentions and promises. His eyes flare, pupils large, orbed with a glowing ring of sky blue. A grin that is pure sex plays in the corner of his mouth.
"I want this tonight,"
he purrs, poking through the tight muscles and holding the tip of his thick pad inside me. I whimper, but push back to aid him in inserting his forefinger. My pussy ripples, the penetration only inches away like a phantom sensation inside those muscles, pushing in, and if I sit back, maybe I'll feel...
"Stop, sweet girl,"
he orders, in a gravelly deep timbre that curls my toes. He drops his arm from the top of the sofa and grips my hip hard to still me.
"Not without lubrication."
My head swims when I look down at his cock expanding between us, reaching up to his navel, huge and veined.
"I like the way you gaze at my cock, with yearning. You nearly salivate, little dear. It's the prettiest thing."
Licking my lips, I agree with a nod. The taste of him does things to me. He smiles at my eagerness.
"Be a good girl. Go to my top drawer and bring me the bottle. I'll make you forget tonight."
I climb to my feet, and while I retrieve the bottle, he puts his cigar out in the ashtray on the table. His powerful physique is leaning back when I approach him again. Muscles protrude down the plane of his abdomen with finely cut valleys around each, and down his long arms they create ridges and bulk. His formidability, how quickly he could attack, snap a person in two using those muscles, stokes me into a fever. He is a lion in wait. I want him. Crawling quickly back onto the lap of this dangerous man, I spread my thighs wide over him. Grinding my hips on the length of him, I slide my pussy up and down, stroking my clit over him, reveling in the simmering pleasure. He groans his approval, but focuses on his task and the bottle in his hand, covering his fingers in clear gel. I put on a show. Watching him closely, I rub myself to a wet, primed state. I should be more anxious. I'm not sure what to expect. I've had a plug in my ass for hours. Surely I can handle the throbbing of his cock inside me. I flop my arms over his shoulders as he positions me forward. I can feel his hands lathering the length of him behind my spine, hear the rumble of his satisfaction as he jerks himself a few times. Then he stops, and my nose meets his, our eyes inches apart.
"Breathe deeply,"
he purrs, exhaling hard, smoky, cigar-scented air hitting my face. Bracing me at the top of his cock, hovering me over his lap, he pushes one hand flat to my lower spine, arching me, my backside tilting. His other hand grips my hip, rolling me slightly as the bulbous crown of his erection pops through the tight muscles. My eyes widen and his darken.
"Fuck. Good girl. Very, very good. Your first time, darling. Keep your eyes open so I can see you."
He levers my hips as the thick length of him slides excruciatingly slowly inside me.
"I don't want you anywhere else when I'm inside you."
I fist his hair when it gets too much, my nails grating his skin. A constant burn around his penetration blazes, the muscles fighting back against the invasion, the sensation of pain growing, moving up, into me. "Stop! Stop! Stop!" I pant, the stretch of those muscles all consuming, each nerve channeled down there. My body bursts with the need to recoil, to stop the sting. My ears and neck are hot, and my throat tight. He studies my face, and I glance away evasively, disappointed in myself for stopping him. Other girls do this. Why can't I? I want to do it. I want to feel it. He pulls himself out of me, and I almost cry at the relief when my ass closes and the burning stops. I'm sorry.
Don't you dare use that word. You know what it will get you. Never be sorry for recognizing your limits.
I blink at him. How far in were you? His brows draw in.
Barely at all, sweet girl.
What if you don't fit? He smiles smoothly and sweeps a rogue hair over my shoulder.
I will, little dear.
But how do you know? You're not a girl. What if it really hurts and you don't know because no one has ever told you? I'm scared it's going to hurt.
I would never hurt any part of you.
He stares at me with intensity playing through a dark thought.
Come with me, sweet girl.
He nods for me to climb from him, and I do as I'm nodded to do. He stands, grabs a perfect diamond-shaped pillow, and walks into the dressing room with it grasped in his fist. The length of his body, a long form, muscles curving and flexing in a smooth, predatory way. This man is every bit as formidable and powerful when he's naked as at any other time. More so in a smooth, unaffected fashion, as though he could just as easily kill a man in this state. His suited form, muscles visible beneath layers of expensive fabric, is not what gives this powerful man his intimidating presence. It is in his very being. He places the pillow on the ottoman and nods towards it, and I blush, remembering when I touched myself there.
Lay down, mount my pillow, and twist your face towards the mirror. I want you to watch.
Heat creeps up my neck, the warmth of excitement blooming across my skin, and when I crawl on the ottoman and look at myself, my skin is slowly pinkening. Steadily, I lay flat. The ottoman is long enough to accommodate my entire length. I watch as the deadliest man in the city, naked, all trim lines and tattoos, places a knee on either side of my body. He repositions me and the pillow until it is between my legs and under my pelvis. His eyes are hooded as he gazes at me, my backside arched up, my pussy instantly grinding on the pillow, yearning for that blissful pressure. I am swimming in ecstasy as I stare at his reflection. He looks so much larger than me in the mirror. A formidable 6'5" physique hovering over a smaller frame, barely the same species, we are so utterly opposite. That is what we are. What we look like all the time. The orphan and the mafia don. He uses the bottle in his hand to lubricate his palms. I swallow, my white skin now glowing deep hues of rouge. I moan as his hands work my muscles down to my backside, attentive and warm. My body is lax and opening. He begins to massage the cheeks at my bum, and I gaze down to watch his cock strain against his navel, thick like my forearm, covered in perfect blue veins that pulse. I roll my bottom lip against the upper to the sight of him. His massaging movements sway his body, his cock heavy, moving with him. It's an erotic view. Sir. His name tumbles from my lips when firm palms massage up my back and down again, my entire body loosening under his skilled kneading. Then His finger touches the rim between my cheeks, but I don't clench around it. I watch him instead. His eyes are glued to his masterful workings. He rims me leisurely, dipping in and then out. Something like a moan, but far too guttural to be one, fills my throat. I love the sensation. I begin to press back again, and he stills his finger.
That's my good little dear.
Swimming in heat and thick air, I rock my hips back and forth, rubbing my pussy on the pillow and then taking his finger in slow, stretching inches.
Christ, you're simply the prettiest thing I have ever seen. That's very good. Your body loves being full of me, all your pretty holes available and open. You are just nervous, sweet girl. Watch me enjoy your lovely little ass.
I squeeze my eyes shut as he slowly drags his finger from inside me, all my internal muscles rippling and my body shuddering at the last pop. He presses the crown of his cock to my puckering rosette, and my eyes fly open to watch him. With his brows tight, his mouth open and panting, he inches inside me. His cock stretches the tight, defiant rim, sliding through the muscle, forcing my pelvis harder into the pillow.
This is my little ass, my sweet, supple body. I will never hurt it. Christ, you feel good.
He groans as he continues to penetrate me. My head spins. My arousal coats the pillow. I clench to his choppy breaths.
Fuck! I want you like this, laying over my ottoman when I get home, humping your pillow, panting, wanting for my cock to fill your asshole.
I am riveted to the way this large man takes my body, every inch of his thick erection disappearing within me. I open my mouth to gasp, my tongue flat to the bottom of my jaw, seeking air. I take him. It's all I can do. My pussy spasms. As he impales me, he lowers himself to his elbows, and the change of position sends a forewarning thrill of sensation through my backside. There is more. It screams, there is more. The hand that was playing with my ass before grips the cushioning of the ottoman, squeezing, while his other hand wraps around my jaw and mouth.
Suck on my fingers like a good girl, little dear.
Dipping his index finger and his forefinger between my lips, he soothes me. I suck them as he starts to fuck me. Fuck me. My pulse is like a perpetual cymbal between my temples, eyes glued to the prowess of his movements, to his muscles as they contract and tense, his body rolling in controlled, effortless wave, down to sink inside me and up to draw out. I am so overwhelmed by the sight of him using my body, the sound of his near-violent groans, the feel of him thrusting through my taut rim, sinking in deep against the contracting, his hard body meeting mine and then lifting again. He is a beautiful machine. I suck his fingers harder.
I'm in so deep, sweet girl.
He groans, stilling and panting.
Look how well you did. Look at how your lovely body takes my cock. Such a good girl for me.
I gaze at his reflection as he thrusts, working his cock in me, using his hips in a rhythm that rubs my pussy on the pillow, a grin that is carnal ticking to a large menacing curve. Pleasure builds between my thighs, and my orgasm builds to his rocking motion, perfectly timed with his hips, the pillow stimulating my pulsing flesh while his cock presses against my pussy walls. Somehow, I can feel him in both deep, sensual places. It's dizzying. Stars burst around my vision. I lose track of which sensation is where. My entire pelvis humming with brutal vibrations that play on the cusp of pain, that dance on warning, that flood with euphoria. I begin to moan, and I don't stop. Wanton and crazed and sucking his fingers as though I'm starved for the salty taste of them, I come apart. He throws his head back as I balance on consciousness, his hips taking on a rougher beat, the coils of veins laced up his arms protruding, his powerful physique tensing and bunching as he comes inside me.
Madonna mia!
He freezes so deep. His forehead meets my neck, his lips press to my spine, and sweat drips from him to my skin. He begins to speak in another language. Praise. I can tell he's praising me, but his mind is so wrapped in pleasure, he doesn't realize he's not speaking in English. His fingers slide from my lips. Long moments pass with him pulsing within me, mounted on my back, braced above me so his weight doesn't crush me. Then he lifts his head. He collects me into his arms.
I'm so proud of my little dear for taking me so beautifully.
I wrap loose, tired limbs around him, standing. His cock slides from inside me, and the sensation of being emptied drags a cry from my throat. His cum drips from inside me, forcing a blush to creep up my neck and along my cheeks. It is an uncomfortably sensual sensation that is so very primal. We wash up in the bathroom, and he fingers me there to help clean me. My legs near collapse with how much I'm enjoying that stimulation now. I stroke his length as he does, massaging soap into his cock with two hands. We dry each other.
Lay down, sweet girl. I'll be back shortly.
I sit on the bed, hug my knees and stare at the door, already anticipating shortly is a lie. The phantom sensation of his fingers and cock inside me still flush arousal through my body as I wait. Within a minute, he's back with my kitten in hand, and I'm bouncing a little with excitement to see her. Beaming, I reach for the fluffy animal and instantly fall backwards with her pawing my chest and fumbling in my grip. Her squeaky meows mix with my voice as I say, "You're going to let her sleep in the bed?" It surprises me, yet I don't know why. I suppose a man who has pillows staged in perfect diamonds and uncomfortable wrought iron tables placed in prime lounging areas doesn't strike me as the kind of man who allows white fur over his black sheets or takes kindly to early morning kitten licks to the nose and cheeks. Sliding onto the mattress, he positions himself on one elbow to watch me and her play. I run the tips of my fingers down her little fur legs, and she pulls them from me like, "I gotta use those leggies, Mummy." I laugh a little at my own inner monologue.
"She can sleep in the bed for now,"
he answers. A smile that is smooth, devilish charm taps the corner of his lips, making him look younger, but no less intimidating. My heart grows. For tonight?
At least tonight.
I study him, meeting unwavering eyes that are always assessing and watching. He's radiating heat. His muscles are still on fire from the meticulous way he fucked me. I didn't do anything. I never do much. "Did I do okay?" I ask him, tucking a piece of his dark hair behind his ear, rewarded with the easiest of chuckles, the deepest and most contented, and just clay.
"Such a sweet question."
I don't really ever do much. I shrug. "Is that okay?" I stroke my kitten as she meows, falling off my chest into the small gap between Clay and me. I feel like I just...
Take me so well. Look so pretty. Flush for me. Open for me. You sound so endearing when you come apart around my cock, and you enjoy the way I control your body. You enjoy being manhandled, little dear. Don't feel ashamed. You're safe with me, sweet girl. Safe to be you.
Am I enough? I swallow thickly. Like that.
You are more than enough, little dear. My strong, brave, bratty, sweet girl. I don't think you understand what you mean to me. I am changing for you, not the other way around. You wanted comfort. I filled my home with pillows and lounges, hung a dream catcher above my bed, replaced my books with softer stories. You wanted to be spoiled. I make sure you have every kind of sweet thing available to you. You wanted a purpose, responsibility, so I gave you the kitten. You wanted attention. I'll offer you every moment I have to give. And...
His eyes darken.
You wanted to be disciplined, to be held accountable, so I will damn well punish you when you misbehave. You wanted a dangerous man, little dear, and I will threaten the lives of every fucker you meet, and...
He pauses, and I'm riveted by his every word.
You want pleasure, so I will give you every kind you desire, because you are not enough. You are more, so I will make the world around you more, too.
My heart expands. When I peer up at the dreamcatcher above my head, my smile grows too. Everything growing, swelling, making room for the future. Thinking about all the love and affection I now have. Friendships. Him. His family. My kitten. Clay Butcher. The Don of the Cosa Nostra, who hangs dream catchers over his bed, sleeps with a nameless white kitten. A man who understands intimately who I am, through my skin and bone to my soul, to my slowly building self-confidence, who understands what I have been through, who turns the immaculate world he lives in around to fit my brand of rumpled and eccentric personality, to meet my needs. For a moment, inside my mind, I see a smoke-filled forest and eyes so like mine staring back at me through the fog. As I focus on those brown eyes, my kitten prods me with her little needles. I sigh. I don't need a man with my likeness. I don't need a father or a mother or a sibling or uncle, not when I have him as all-consuming and impressive as all those roles combined. He is my everything. Chapter 28. Fawn. Luna. Luna Butcher. She pads around in the diamond gap of my legs, occasionally stopping to lick milk from my cereal bowl. The television flashes with the morning news, and I get my first glimpse of Clay since we fell asleep last night. He was gone this morning. But there he is, wearing his smooth, charismatic armor, fitted to perfection within a flawless charcoal suit. I know what is under that armor now, and it's volatile, deep, vulnerable, angry. So full of passion and possession, it makes me want to weep with joy that a man so alive lives beneath that veil. A familiar-looking red-headed woman interviews him in front of a burnt trunk, and behind them, in the far, far distance, a helicopter circles the glowing forest. The orange headlining banner scrolling the bottom of the screen reads, 8 members of the Outlaw Stockyard Motorcycle Group and well-known businessman Dustin Nerick have died after becoming trapped in the bushfire due to taking a shortcut back to their motorcycle headquarters. Clay goes on to say,
I flew back from Dubai the moment I received the regrettable news. The city and all its members send their condolences to the families of the fallen Stockyard motorcycle community. It is truly a tragedy. We will be hosting a memorial ride through the district on Thursday.
He's a clever man.
Don't let her eat from your bowl,
HJ says, capturing my attention, appearing in the lounge room wearing his all-black suit and tie.
They have worms, Miss Harlow.
I curl up my nose. Luna does not have worms. They put the little drops on her fur to kill the worms. He stops staunchly in front of me, his hands hanging down by his sides. Exhaling hard, I ready myself for another day of being followed, being politely responded to, being treated like a ward. It is what it is.
You know,
he begins,
I'm lucky to still have a job. I'm lucky to still be alive. A month ago, Mr. Butcher would have fired me for letting you slip away. Well, at least that would have been the story for why I wasn't around.
Gazing up at him, regret for him but not for my actions plays across my face. I'm so sorry. I had to. He nods stiffly.
I know. I need you to remember that it's my job to keep you safe. At the very least, you should have requested I go with you.
I laugh at him. You wouldn't have let me go.
No, because Mr. Butcher is my boss. And your safety is important to me as well.
Luna crawls out from my diamond leg pen and stumbles over to his freshly polished black shoe, rubbing her face on the reflective surface, smearing it with her dribble. Then she tumbles to the side, her paws going up, swatting at the black laces. So, I peer up at my henchman butler Rat, who I am very fond of even though he is a pain in my ass. I had no choice. I'm glad you're not dead, by the way. Even though you're a rat. He ignores Luna as she attacks his shoe.
Rats are the new cats. I read it in Cosmopolitan.
I laugh, surprised he managed a joke given our new less friendly arrangement. You know, I heard that people change on death row. I didn't realize it would happen so quickly, so profoundly. Your sense of humor has finally returned. He looks lighter as he says,
which leads me to the next thing I have to say to you, Miss Harlow.
Wait, is this about your sense of humor or your epic experience on death row? I'm fragile after all.
You are not fragile. I think that ship has sailed. No, this is about my job,
he advises, amusement in his voice, a sound I have missed.
Mr. Butcher has changed my contract.
I deadpan. No, I don't want a new butler rat. I like my butler rat. Oh, is he taking you away from me?
No.
He smiles.
He's giving me to you. I'm officially under your orders from now on.
I squint at him. Wait. As I try to understand what that means, I pause and watch Luna try to crawl up his leg. What does that mean? Looking down at the kitten as she makes her way towards his crotch, he tries to gently shake her off his leg. She doesn't budge. So he pries her from his thigh and sets her on the ground again. She makes a squeaky call of annoyance.
I'll do what you ask of me,
he says, pulling my focus back to the knowing sparkle in his eyes. Happiness plays along my mouth as the meaning behind that gesture registers. He trusts you with me.
He trusts you, Miss Harlow.
My breath catches. Whoa. A little flicker of control, of place, identity, and acceptance rolls around inside me. I beam. I have an employee. Can I request that you call me Fawn? He grins.
Yes, boss.
I crack up laughing, finding the word boss exciting as all hell, now understanding why Clay Butcher looks and smells like power, because that's what he is. Walking, talking, smelling perfect power. And I have a little borrowed power of my own now, too. I get an idea. Now that the threat of my dad is over, I take a big breath. Can I leave the house?
You may.
He holds his hand out for me to take, and I do, standing with his assistance.
Where would you like to go?
To Max and Cassidy's house. Then to see Xander, I say immediately, brushing the short white hairs from my jeans and flowy pink crop top. I got a little head spin from jumping up fast, but rattle the fuzz around until it releases its hold. His brows draw in.
Of all the places you could go, you want to head straight towards drama again?
Yes. I want to make sure he's okay. He took a bullet for me, and he's pissed Clay off, and Cassidy must be so upset. Fuck, maybe with me? I fumble on the unwelcome thought. Remembering the last time I saw her and Shoshana, I avoided them. Avoided the accusation in their sorrowful eyes. Damn. I cringe at the memory. Yeah, I have to go. And I have to see Xander too. It's my fault he was taken. And he's my friend.
And you should eat more before we go. Don't think for a second I didn't just see you nearly faint.
I didn't nearly faint. Don't be dramatic. After putting Luna back in her pen, I walk towards the kitchen. He trails me, his dubious expression like a hand tapping me on the shoulder.
You went whiter than you are naturally.
No, I didn't. I dismiss, grabbing a muffin from the basket of goods Maggie fills with freshly baked pastries and cakes. See? I wave the orange and poppy seed muffin at him. Wandering towards the front door, I take a bite because he isn't wrong. I've eaten, I had cereal, but when I stood up, I did get a little wave of dark coasting across my vision, a moment of weakness, heavy headiness, but I'm set on seeing Clay's brothers and Cassidy. My direction, towards the front doors, spikes my pulse as though any minute now I will get tackled to the ground for trying to escape. I open the left one and slowly step out into the spacious air, utterly free, standing at the top of the stairs in the far-reaching daylight. It is a beautiful estate. The hedges roll into the distance towards those looming white fences. At the foot of the front steps, shiny black vehicles line the side parking lot with one standing out like a sore thumb. It's red. Henchman Jeeves is suddenly at my side and the out-of-place car flashes ahead. The sound of it unlocking resonates like independence.
That's your vehicle, Fawn. And they?
He points to the four men now climbing into another car nearby.
Will be following us. They work for Clay.
Of course. I knew he couldn't relinquish complete control. I jog down the steps and rush over to the car, eager to touch it. I run my fingers across the metallic red paint. No, orange. No, gold. Depending on the angle, the car flashes with various analogous colours. I smile. It's a nice offer though, isn't it?
It is.
He rounds the vehicle and steps into the driver's side with one foot, staring at me over the sparkling red-orange roof.
Jump in, and I'll take you to see Mr. Butcher.
I grin over the roof, then wiggle my eyebrows with mischief dancing around on them. Do you think he'll teach me to drive it one day?
I doubt it. Anyway, you have me.
I'll work on him. It takes 20 minutes to get to Max and Cassidy's neighbourhood. The houses are mostly two stories, a bit smaller than the ones in Connolly, but the appearance of wealth is still in the cleanliness, the perfect green lawns, all those cultivated roses. Being from the other side of Stormy River, I've only ever seen poverty, rusty bikes and motor vehicles abandoned on lawns, couches in strange outdoor positions, the kind I'd never sit on, not for $1 million. Then, a few months ago, I experienced the culture shock of Clay's level of abundant prosperity. We slow at the base of a small hill. There are no parking spots, so we leave the car on the street. Closely behind us, the car with Clay's soldiers brakes and parks a few lengths away. Henchman Jeeves opens the passenger door for me, and I make my way up the pretty, pebbly walkway to the house. Ahead of me now, standing on top of the hill, is a home with two levels and low white fencing around a veranda. The beautiful construction looks like Cassidy and the absolute opposite of Max. It looks friendly, charming, not overly big, but clearly built with wealth. Butterflies awaken inside me. I can do this. Nodding to myself, I approach the door and knock, instantly met by barking and canine grumbles. I beam and widen my legs to brace myself for the large Bernese mountain dog's attention. She can effortlessly bowl my feet out from under me. Cassidy answers the door with Clara, the noisy canine, peering around her waist to get a good look at me. "Hi," I breathe the word, suddenly hit with nervousness that fills my chest, creating an airy kind of sensation. "You might not want to see me after everything. It was my fault that Max got hurt and..." "Look," she says straight away, ushering Clara away with a little pat. "I am overprotective of my Max. I didn't like what happened. I didn't like not knowing. It really hurt. I care about no one as much as him. He's mine. My Max." I suck a breath in. "I know, it was my fault, but no, Fawn." Opening the door and stepping to the side for me, she adds, "It was Dustin's fault that Max got hurt, not yours. It was Max's fault that he did this without telling me, but from what I've heard, if you didn't go with him, Xander might be dead." Her eyes well up. "I will always be selfish when it comes to Max. I'll always want to keep him safe above anything or anyone else. I don't apologize for that. I can't. But you were so brave, Fawn, to go to him and to think of Xander. You risked your life for Xander's." I exhale with relief, but shake my head at her praise. "I didn't feel brave at all. It was what had to happen." "Honestly, I didn't see that side of you before this. The protective side, the selfless side, everything has been a little about Fawnish. I'm sorry for that. It's just how it has seemed from the outside. Clay put you on this pedestal. Don't scare Fawn, don't upset her, make sure she eats. And these boys are special. And I like you. I like most people, but now that I look at our interactions, I can see that I didn't really take the time to get to know you." She sighs, a little regret tumbling down the sound. "I didn't see you ever risking your life for one of the boys." I shrug. "It isn't a big deal. You don't owe me anything. I mean, I came the whole way here to avenge a boy who had no fucking respect. Oh, shit." I lower my voice, remembering her daughter Kelly could be close by. "Is Kels here? I probably shouldn't swear around her, hey?" "She's at kindergarten. And it's okay. Max still swears around her and she says, 'Say frick, Daddy.'" Cassidy giggles once, then says, "Finish your story." "Well, he didn't give a shit about me, and I would have done anything to protect him. So, of course, I would do anything to protect Xander. He was my first friend here. He was the one out of everyone who treated me like an equal." "And that means a lot to you, doesn't it?" she asks sadly. "For someone to just treat you with basic human kindness and interest, enough for you to risk your life to save that person. Her throat rolls with emotion. I knew you had a hard past, but I can actually see it in your actions now. The damage, I joke, and she smiles a little. Walking into her beautiful home, I take it all in. It's large, open plan, and warm with oak-colored flooring. You impressed Max, she states as though that is the highest of regards. And he is not an easy man to impress. I guess that means you're a butcher girl now. Then the curve of her mouth dances with amusement as she says, you know, it's a lot of responsibility being a butcher girl. We have a secret clubhouse, meetings, bake sales. I wrap my arms around her in the doorway, the gesture shocking her equally as much as it shocks me. I turn my face into her hair and say, thank you. She returns my hug. Don't thank me. Didn't I just tell you about all the responsibilities? I laugh gently and step back from her. I'll do a bake sale any damn day. Then I take a big breath in and say, can I see Max? Is he badly hurt? Of course. He's in pain, but he's pretending he's not. You know how that is. They're all outside. She waves a little, saying, follow me. We walk down the long corridor, well lit by the windows and glass sliding door at the end. The natural light floods the space, highlighting the family photos lining the white walls. I gaze at pictures as I pass them. Smiling, I see a lot of Kelly and Max and Cassidy, Clara too. Then there are some of Bronson and Xander at parties. And finally, wedding photos with the entire family. A whole collage of photos at a tropical location halts me, my feet unable to move. There is Clay and Aurora, looking very married, couply. Her wedding dress is like nothing I have ever seen before. Get over it, Fawn. I am his everything. I rub my chest. It still hurts to see another woman experience something with him that I never will. I want all of his experiences, all of him. I may be selfish, needy, but the sting is real and it flares in the face of their smiling images. I stare it down, wish it away, focus on all the details like a detective might. Faces directed towards the camera, the position of their hands clasped together, the shape of their smiles, wanting to see a message, a clue that even then on that wonderful day they were only friends. I don't see it. I see love. I find myself glaring at it. I had no idea it was an arranged marriage, Cassidy says, stopping beside me, also looking at the picture, and I try for a smile, but I've never been particularly good at feigning them. So you can imagine I was shocked, well, by you. But Clay is like a robot. He's hard to read, and he has this trained charm that he turns on for everyone around him. He is always, I don't know, performing, you know? Shoshana says he's been like that for as long as she has known him. I scoff with derision. She touches my shoulder with hers, a little bump of sorts. And she told me of a time when she was in high school. Clay picked her up from her house. On the drive, he told her that he would not marry for love, that his love story with Aurora was not real. But he wanted love for his brothers, and he would protect them. He's not in love with her, Fawn, and he never was. But he knew what it looked like. He saw it in Shoshana and Bronson when they were just children. He knew it was worth having, worth protecting. He just sacrificed his own chance at it for them. Until you. I sulk. He looks in love.
Little dear.
His voice nearly throws me over with the deep power in the commanding tone. I twist to see Clay stepping through Max and Cassidy's front door, his body a formidable machine now sauntering towards me in an expertly tailored navy suit. My pulse begins to race, just like it always does. My belly swarms with butterflies, vibrating and reminding me he's still the master of my nerves. How is it that I'm not used to this man yet? He stops close, his essence radiating warmth towards me, and I peer up at him through my blonde lashes. Yep, out of all the atoms in the world, in the universe, the ones that make up Clay Butcher are far more superior than any others.
I'm staring at the camera, sweet girl,
he says pointedly. His finger touches my chin, lifting it.
Since the moment I laid my eyes on you, they have not wanted to be anywhere else. Remember?
No, Cassidy swoons, gazing puppy-eyed at us, and Clay doesn't even flinch. No visual disdain with her cooing over his statement. He is above it. Above embarrassment. I'll go, she adds quietly. See you two outside. Everyone is out there. She wanders away, and I melt into his attention. I'm glad you're here, sir. But now you can go make up with your brother. He steps backward to rake his heated stare over my appearance, his eyes travelling over my flowy shirt and high-waisted jeans. There is a slither of skin between the denim and the shirt, and his eyes stop on it.
You look adorable. Young. You make me feel like a dirty old man, sweet girl.
I smile, liking the way his eyes drag along my skin. He reaches for my hand, threading our fingers together, pressing his palm to mine so every part of his touches every part of mine.
Follow me, then I may take you outside.
May take me? God, he's bossy. The heat between our bodies rises as we walk in the opposite direction to where Cassidy disappeared. My conditioned response to his intent stirs inside me, a ball of hot need swelling in my core, inducing wetness, igniting an animal instinct. Overly aroused, I try to ignore the pictures of sweet Cassidy dancing in her studio, ballet accolades, and a few of Mac's boxing that follow me down the corridor. I am panting by the time we stop outside a closed door, my pulse having picked up pace, now a little trot in my throat. Here? I'm not exactly quiet.
You nearly fainted, little dear.
Unreadable, he reaches for the door and opens it, ushering me inside a... I bump into the ceramic bowl. A toilet? He shuts the door, pressing his back to it. I turn to look up at his serious expression as he reaches into his pocket and pulls out a small plastic-wrapped straw-shaped package.
I need you to remove the cap. Urinate on the end of this.
Oh my God! I exclaim before spitting out. That's why you're here! Dobber! Rat! Pain in my ass. I thought he worked for me now. I'm firing him. I call out to the closed door, knowing HJ probably isn't even inside the house. Hear that? You're fired, henchman Jeeves! Clay takes a firm hold of my jaw, my voice muffled and then silenced completely.
Quiet, sweet girl. Your bratty side will get you fucked.
The intensity in his fingers as they dip into my skin snatches my breath. He's deadly serious right now. His eyes change. Large, ominous pupils expand like black dye until the clear blue within is merely a thin ring.
I won't wait a moment on this. I need to know why you nearly fainted. Now, sit. Do as I say.
He lowers his mouth to my ear, blanketing me in hot breath, danger, possessiveness, a warning in his radiating heat.
Then I'll tend to that weeping little pussy with my fingers before we go outside.
Releasing his hold on my jaw, his fingertips tend to the divots they left, massaging my cheeks a few times before falling away. He straightens and nods to the bowl.
I won't leave you needy, sweet girl. Don't leave me concerned.
My pulse upgrades from a trot to a full-blown gallop in my throat as I take the small plastic package from him. I know what this is. I've done this once before, and it was positive. I slide my jeans and knickers down my thighs, sit on the toilet, and hold the tube between my thighs in the bowl. I should be embarrassed with having his eyes so intently glued to me, but being alone in any capacity feels infinitely more uncomfortable than being in his company. I don't know when that happened, when my skin became more perfectly molded, more contently warm, just in the mere proximity of this powerful man. I look down at the stick. Holding my breath, I pee on the end. It's a bit mechanical, a bit dutiful, but something else too, like significant, I think. Aurora has his ring, his name, but I'll share his children. It's still not real yet, just a possibility. Does he really want this? Oh God, don't start panicking. Swallowing, I place the cylinder on the floor with shaky hands. I don't pull my underwear up in case I have to pee on it again, or it needs more pee, or I can't think, can't move. I glare at the tube as though, by damn will alone, I can make that second strip appear. A pretty, positive test that will make me significant and him a dad. Don't panic. My eyes widen in my contemplations. He leans down and picks it up, and I follow it. The column is wet. A tiny bit of my wee is on the plastic. He doesn't care. Clay doesn't stare at the cylinder. Instead, his intense blue eyes spear me, the silence stretching under his attention. I can hear my breathing, but not his. Can hear my heart beating in my ears, feel it a pounding drum in my neck and face. Why aren't we talking? Why aren't I talking? Will he be disappointed if I'm not pregnant? Disappointed in my body? I've lost a child before. What if I lose this one? I always thought I wasn't made of the right stuff.
You are better than those thoughts, sweet girl. No matter the result, I will love you. I will keep all my promises to you, and I will fuck you until you are.
My throat tightens, tears rising. I anchor myself in his eyes, fighting the pull of the column in his fist, fighting the need to drag my gaze to it. What if I can't anymore? That's a thing, right? Sometimes the stuff inside just stops working after trauma, after... He holds my stare effortlessly.
We will make it happen, little dear. I will fill you every night for the rest of your life.
What if I lose him, like I lost the last one? Panic wins out, rising my voice. You'll hate me and find someone...
I will do no such thing.
I fight the pull. Will you find someone else?
I do not want children, little dear.
My breath hitches. What?
I want children with you.
I can't hold it anymore. I have to look at it, have to know the results. My eyes drop to the testing panel while his stay on mine, and there are two lines. I gasp, the choppy sound falling out as the waves of emotion rise like a flood, bursting out of my eyes under the pressure. I'm too full with happiness. Fear. Happiness. Fear. Rivulets of tears clog my vision, but I can still see the moment Clay Butcher finally looks at the cylinder. His brows pinch. And I can't. I cover my face, unable to handle the throes of what all this means, the gravity and responsibility, the excitement and belonging of growing his fucking Clay Butcher's baby inside my womb. I can't. What if I lose it? Oh, God, I'm having his baby. Clay Butcher's baby. Clay Butcher's baby. He is on his knees in front of me now. Warm hands pull mine from smothering my face.
Do not cover your face for any man. Do not cover your face for anyone. You are my queen. Chin high, sweet girl.
Holding my trembling hands in his, he stares at me, inches from me, on the floor of this toilet. His eyes are shiny, intense, reaching inside my gaze to find my soul and hold it with authority and care.
Thank you for giving me this gift, sweet girl.
He says in a meaningful, deep timbre that is raw with severity.
I am going to devote my life to the children you make for me.
I slowly shake my head, staring at my small hands protected in his large ones, blinking at them, the tears rolling out with each bat of my lashes. I remember the first time I saw his hands, remember how I considered all the men he had probably killed with them. Now, today, I visualize the way they will look so big, gently cradling a little baby. What if they ruin your life, sir? I peer up from his hands and meet the most striking clear blue eyes. What if you hate being a dad?
Impossible.
He lifts my chin.
You are my heir, little dear. So any part of you is the reason I breathe.
And I have my second good thing. Clay Butcher, number one. His heir, number two.
Chapter 29, Clay. There have been many memorable moments in my life, events that changed the very fibers of me, that constructed Clay Butcher, the reasons I act, behave, work. My first kill and my mother's reaction to it changed me, hardened me. And now this, my little heirs. This will forever mold me, soften me. I can already feel it. I won't be the man I was yesterday, as now I have more to lose, more to die for, more to smile for. I stare at stunned, emotion-ridden, dual-colored eyes as beads of tears blink through blonde lashes. She is my everything. Love happened quietly for me, and like most emotions, it brewed against my will. There was no place for sentiment in my life. But I feel it anyway. A building upsurge, then just like a wave, it crashes. Now I'm below the emotion of it all, surrounded by it as its current controls my every muscle, my every thought and motivation. It is all her. I didn't look at the positive test until after I saw her eyes gloss over, until she had experienced the moment herself. This time, her pregnancy will be hers first. I slide the test into my pocket and say, "Stand, sweet girl." She wobbles to her feet, and I slide her underwear and tight denim up her thighs, buttoning the jeans at her navel. I lean in and rub my nose along the little slit between her shirt and jeans, breathing her in. She'll be full and round here. My cock twitches, thinking about her swelling, her smooth flesh stretching, making me an heir. I'll keep her pregnant if I can. It's a state I want her in. You smell like you need my mouth on you, sweet girl. Let me take you home and spoil your pussy. She touches my jaw, and I straighten to my full height in front of her.
No. I want you to make up with Max. Please. I want...
As you wish, I say, opening the door for her, then watching her precede me from the bathroom and down the corridor. She is a few meters away from me, but today, the distance grates like razor blades under